Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Lunch Hour Sports Podcast. Here with your hosts, Jacob Smedley,
Sam Batts,
Justin Reedhammer,
Peter Amarante,
and Nathan Romanoff.
Today's special guests,
Cameron Whitney.
Topics today include an MLB offseason filled with moves, big free agent signings, and big trades. Sam will break it all down, and the NFL regular season is coming to a close. We will update you on the playoff picture, who's in the hunt, who is in control of their own destiny heading into the final weekend, and the college football playoff is coming to a final game in about a week on Monday. We will break it all down and give our picks and take a look at our picks for some conference championships a few weeks ago. Now here's Sam Betts. Sam, baseball, the hot stove is cooking. The iron is hot. What's going on in Major League Baseball?
And that will be the offseason stove has been cooking right now. We've had a lot of trades. We haven't even talked about baseball in a hot minute, so we're coming right back in. We got some big trades, some big signs to talk about. We'll start off with a big one that happened here in early December. We had Juan Soto going to the New York Yankees, and this was a big package too, which also included Trent Grisham. For the Padres, they received Michael King, Drew Thorpe, Johnny Brito, Randy Vasquez, and Kyle Higashioka. Jake, this is a pretty big trade. We've seen Juan Soto kind of move here from the Nationals to the Padres, now to the Big Apple in New York, the Yankees. Juan Soto is kind of looking to make a big splash. He's kind of been just okay for the Padres. He's had some shining moments here and there, helping the Padres get to the playoffs a little bit. But really, he's kind of struggled a little bit in Padres. We haven't seen that Juan Soto flair, that Juan Soto shuffle that we're used to seeing him. But right now, I think this is a really big move for the Yankees. They've been kind of subpar here. They've been making it to the playoffs here and there. But I think after this year, they really just struggled. They need help in the outfield. You know, we have Aaron Judge out there, making sure he's out there in right field. Giancarlo Stanton, who's been in the DH spot, has not played well at all. I think the Yankees were in this trade, were looking to get a big bat. I think the Padres were kind of just trying to shell out someone who just didn't really work out for them. I just don't think Juan Soto was that piece that they would help them out. So they moved him out to New York. And Trent Grisham struggled a lot the past 2 years. Coming in as a rookie, came in really hot, but really kind of faded out. The Padres did get some pretty good rookies and prospects. They got Drew Thorpe, Johnny Brito. Johnny Brito definitely had some time in the MLB and really shined a little bit, looking to be a nice young starting pitcher. Michael King has had a decent amount of experience in the MLB, coming in relief for the Yankees. Randy Vasquez has had some time in the MLB too. A lot of young, nice pitchers that the Padres got. And also Kyle Higashioka, a veteran catcher who's been on the Yankees for a while as a backup role usually, but nice veteran catcher to have on there. So,
yeah, I think this is a great move for the Yankees. And, I mean, you mentioned Juan Soto with the Padres. There was some, you know, inconsistencies there. The super team that they created, that was short-lived. I don't think he had a down year for his standards. Of course, he set the ceiling extremely high with his first few seasons in the league. It was a down year, a team that the vibes just weren't there. I know vibes are not something that you can quantify in sports, but it just definitely wasn't there in San Diego. And I think going to New York, a fresh scenery, a bigger market, and you have pairing him up with Aaron Judge, creating one of the best duos in baseball with the bat. The Yankees needed protection in some way for Aaron Judge, and I think Juan Soto helps with that. And Trent Grisham, they needed left-handed outfielders, and the Yankees, the short porch and right, they finally get a guy who can mash out there. And yeah, big haul. I like what the Padres got as well. I think Michael King's a good pitcher, but Yeah, a big move for the Yankees, and still rumored to be getting some other moves as well. They should be in the market.
Jake, just kind of continuing on, they've already gotten Alex Verdugo too. I wasn't really going to mention this, but just as another left, you mentioned left-handed hitting. Well, Alex Verdugo is definitely that guy. The Yankees were able to get him for the Red Sox. So just kind of keeping that in mind too. Stocking up on outfielders, stocking up on left-handed hitters, and stocking up on guys who have the potential to kind of be stars. Alex Verdugo's had pretty successful career so far, moving from the Dodgers to the Red Sox and now the Yankees. Yankees are making some moves. They're going to try to make a playoff push, and they're definitely showing that. And also with Juan Soto, I mean, he was an all-star, won a Silver Slugger. Definitely still up there, but not as hot as we'd like to see him. But now the Yankees, who knows? It's going to be interesting to see how those bats roll. Moving on here, we have Aaron Nola. We had to talk about someone for the Phillies because the Phillies have not made any other moves of significance. They did trade minor leaguer Oliver Dunn for some prospects, but other than that, and Aaron Nola signing a 7-year deal long term, not much else is going on for our Phillies, unfortunately. Aaron Nola, he's been up and down. He in 2021, I believe he was, and correct me if I'm wrong, Jake, he was third in NL Cy Young voting.
I believe so, yes. Yep.
He's been an all-star. He was all MLB second team in 2022. He's helped the Phillies in multiple times get to the postseason, even their World Series run that was fortunately cut short by the Astros in 2022. He's helped them get to the playoffs this past year, unfortunately, when they lost. Kind of good deal, I think, for the Phillies. I really would like to see Aaron Nola become more consistent. I feel like he has some really good games, but whenever I do see him, he does end up giving up at least one home run. I feel like I just always see that. I'd like that to maybe him go out there, kind of shut people down, like we've seen Zach Wheeler. Zach Wheeler's been on top, and I really like to see him pitch. Unfortunately, I'd like to see Aaron Nola just kind of just keep up with that, keep up and just get those shutdown games like we've seen Zach Wheeler have time in and time out.
Yeah, Sam, I agree, but I also disagree in the fact that I do see your point. I think Aaron Nola struggled last season. He struggled with the home run ball. I will counter, though, with I think the pitch clock was a big factor, especially out of the gate for him. Later on in the season, there were some more adjustments listening to so some other guys that cover the team and report. And again, do other podcasts and reporting that I listen to is he used his fastball better, lower, higher in the zone, and used his arsenal better through the pitch clock. And I think that was evident earlier on in the playoffs. It wasn't exactly the same guy. He has had to make adjustments with the new pitch clock. But looking at the starting pitching landscape, looking at his resume still for what he has done as a pitcher in this league, it's a price that they had to pay. It's a premium position, as starting pitching. And yeah, I think it's a great move for the Phillies, despite his inconsistencies last season. Of course, he will probably continue to frustrate us at times over the next 7 years, but in totality, I think he's still a top 25, 20 starting pitcher in the game. So I think it's a great get.
I just wanted to kind of bring up a subject we were talking about before the podcast started. When you, me, and Jake were talking about how Aaron Nola's frustrating season last year kind of raised some questions of, did the Phillies even bother re-signing him? You know, he was so inconsistent that he didn't, it, not to everybody or not like a big slap in the face, but it kind of seemed apparent that it would be a big question as to whether they would re-sign him because of that inconsistency. And to be honest, like we were talking about having him in 2021, I think was the year we mentioned him being third place in Cy Young Awards, and then all of a sudden have that big drop in your playing. Do you guys believe that we could see a pickup from Aaron Nola this coming season with like you mentioned, Jake, with this pitch clock management kind of being under his belt a little more? And I like to say that I always feel for every sport that the team around you has a big impact on your performance personally as well. So I feel like with the other pitchers the Phillies have, Zach Wheeler, Michael Lorenzen, I think I said his last name correctly.
I believe he's a free agent. Lorenzen is
Oh,
a free
is he a free
agent.
agent now? Okay, so especially with Zach Wheeler, I think he was the big target I was going to focus on anyway. Having him motivate Aaron Nola to kind of pick it up again and be that Cy Young caliber pitcher we know he could be. Do you guys agree that we could see this shift in a more positive direction starting next season, or do you guys think it's going to be more of a progressive thing in the years to come?
Yeah, I think with him now, I mean, Aaron Nola's a Philly guy. Don't get me wrong. I know I kind of came at him hard. I do love his curveball. Aaron Nola's very ingrained in the Philly community. I think he's a Philly guy. And I think signing him long term, just kind of having him being in that Philly presence, and he hasn't been bad. He's had inconsistencies, but he hasn't been a bad pitcher. I think that with starting pitching, it's like Jake said. You got to find your starting pitching guys. Those are going to be the guys who are going to go six, seven, eight innings, even 9 innings for you now. You need a decent rotation to get you anywhere. It's not just going to be a couple relievers that are going to be able to kind of pick everything up for you. You need those guys who are going to eat up innings and they're going to pitch for you every 5 days. So I think that Aaron Nola, I think that he's definitely going to pick it up. And I think they are changing the rules again for the clock. I believe now with runners on base, it is 18 seconds instead of 20. So another adjustment he's going to have to make. But I think kind of with it having under his loop, I think he's going to bounce back. I think the Phillies are going to, I'm not going to get too ahead of myself. I think I'm going to stick with Aaron Nola. I think he's going to bounce back. I think he'll figure it out next season.
Jake, what are your thoughts on this? I kind of see you shaking your head here, but our listeners can't see that.
Yeah, I agree. I think that he's going to bounce back, and I know Sam will touch on some other pitchers that are on the move that had down years as well. You had some succeed and some that were able to adjust. Some of the great ones like Zach Wheeler, like Gerrit Cole, some others were able to pick up the pitch clock right away and thrive with it. But some other guys like Aaron Nola struggled. Aaron Nola throughout his career, a very rhythm pitcher, and he's with no clock. He was very good with runners on base, but when there was a clock there and there was pressure to get the ball out of his hands, he was, there was trouble there, especially early in the season. So I think the adjustments were made. Hopefully that he can continue with those, but I think he'll bounce back. May not be Cy Young, hopefully Cy Young caliber, but still a good pitcher, I think, is what we'll see from him.
Yeah, I agree, I think. And I'm hoping for the best because I know the four of us here, me, you, Nate, and Sam, are Philly fans. So my last question regarding the Phillies, and I would like to include Nate in on this as well, would be, since we haven't seen the Phillies make very big moves yet, except for the Aaron Nola signing and trading some prospects around, what do you want to see the Phillies do before the season starts? Where do you think their focus should be?
Oh, Pete, that's a good question. I think it would be nice to get another starting pitcher. I know right now they have Christopher Sanchez who's kind of been coming up. I think they just need another starter. I think having the bullpen kind of where it's at right now, it is what it is. I think like the bullpen's just always been such a big thing. I think we just need one more starting pitcher. I think our bats look all right. Obviously, they didn't during that last series in the playoffs, but I think the bats are okay right now. I think the biggest thing for the Phillies to do right now, maybe one other starting pitcher, maybe a little bit higher tier, maybe like kind of middle of the road, upper, like in between that somewhere. I'm not really sure how to describe that. One more guy, and also maybe just to find some consistency. I think the Phillies are very good 1 week, bad the other, kind of switching up here and there. I think they just need to find some consistency. I think once they find a good rhythm, and even if one guy's down, other guys are able to stay consistent. I don't know. I think they just need to kind of minimize the inconsistencies and keep moving forward.
Yeah, I mean, I pretty much agree with everything Sam said. I'm not obviously as big a baseball guy as Sam or Jake, but from what I s have seen from watching the Phillies, especially more closely over the past couple years, starting pitching, it's always like pitching has kind of been the issue. I feel like especially that was prevalent when they got to the postseason. I feel like if they would have had one more solid starting pitcher, perhaps that World Series against the Houston Astros would have gone a little differently. I just think they're missing, like Sam said, that one like key guy who can come in and be that solidified third guy behind Wheeler and Nola. Obviously, the pitching market right now in the MLB, there's a lot of guys out there, so there's guys for him to go and look at. and pick up, and I think they should pull the trigger and go sign one of those starters. I really think that, because I'm not too worried about the hitting. I think that the hitting, you know, sure, they'll go through their lulls throughout the season, but the guys they have on the roster right now, I mean, come on, you know, those guys can swing the bats and get the bats going. So I'd really focus on just shoring up the pitching and getting, you know, one more solid starter, like Sam said.
Yeah, I think, you know, to join the rallying cry, if you will, I think a starting pitcher would be great. I know there's a lot of names circling around right now. Blake Snell, Jordan Montgomery, some other Shoto Imanaga, the Phillies are, you know, in those circles. They were linked to Yoshinobu Yamamoto. They didn't get him, went to the Dodgers. But the fact that they were in those discussions made him an offer shows that they're willing, they know that they can make a move like this. And we just talked about Aaron Nola, but imagine a three-headed monster, if you will, in creating one of the best rotations in baseball with a potential Wheeler Nola Snell, Wheeler Nola Montgomery, who was a big piece in the Rangers World Series win. So the Phillies know that. I think from their offers and from their linkings to guys, I don't think it's a matter of time, but I think it's something that, like they've mentioned, it's something that could take them over the top and it helped them start off better, which I think is the biggest thing. And they've started very poor the past few years and had to really ramp it up late. And watching MLB Network a few days ago, it's just like, that's what I think they've run out of gas later on, because they're pressing, you know, they're trying to get into the playoffs, and then they're pressing a lot in the postseason, run out of gas at the worst time.
Yeah, I agree with everyone. My thoughts have been from the start. I was really hoping we get Yamamoto on our team, because just watching him throw, videos of him throw, is scary. But, I mean, I agree. If we could get a guy like Snell or Montgomery to add that third man who can really, like, and even in the series, like a three-game series, especially against the team we all hate in the Mets, you know, we hate the Mets. So, like, imagine a game where, like, we can have a sweep and down a game three and Blake Snell's pitching. Imagine that Philly crowd, you know, getting behind Blake Snell. I mean, the Philly crowd will always get behind Philly, but, no, I think that seeing the Phillies make moves for pitchers is giving me hope for this team and what they definitely need. But I'm kind of stretching this conversation a little bit, but I'm interested, Sam and Nate and Jake, really quick, Snell or Montgomery, if you could pick one.
At first, like, asking it, if I'd even, like, think about it, I would say Blake Snell.
Top of my head, I want Montgomery.
I am going to go with Montgomery. Snell needs to throw more innings for me to, but both are perfect as a number three starter. Perfect or number three, either one. But Montgomery is a proven winner.
All right. As much as I love to talk about the Phillies, they have not. We've talked about them most, and they've only made like two moves this year. So moving on. Now we're going to go to the Padres, and the Padres have made actually some pretty decent moves here. They've gone overseas to get some decent relief help. They've got Yuki Matsui out of the Nippon Professional Baseball League. He pitched for the Golden Eagles. There were a lot of international stars who we're going to talk about from, like, Nippon, from the Korean Baseball League, who were actually taken this offseason. And I think that's a really kind of cool thing to see, that they're going over to Asia now. Asia is now becoming a pretty popular place to get some premier stars. And we'll talk about this as we go on. But kind of moving on to Yuki Matsui. With his time with the Golden Eagles since 2014, He's 25-46 now. He is a relief pitcher, so don't let that scare you. Looking at win-loss record for relief pitchers, not what you're looking at. ERA is 2.40, so I mean, he's definitely been able to hold off some runners there. He's had 860 strikeouts and 236 saves. He's been a five-time NPB All-Star, and he's also been a three-time Pacific League saves champion, two of those recently in 2022 and 2023. He was also part of the World Baseball Classic team for Japan that won the gold medal, and that's going to be another reoccurrence that we're going to see here too. But they did beat the United States, as Nate is giving the thumbs down. But I think he's a really solid pickup. It's kind of always, and again, this is going to be another theme. It's kind of hard to see tell whether overseas baseball players are going to have success in the MLB. We have seen a lot of guys with some success. Obviously, we're going to talk about one of them here. I always keep alluding. I'm alluding to a lot of things. I'm going to
let
talk
it out,
about.
Sam. Let it out. Let it all out.
But kind of moving on, another reliever that the Padres got, this time from the Korean Baseball League, was Woo Suk Go. From the LG Twins, comes in with, since 2017, 19-26. He has a 318 earned run average, 401 strikeouts and 139 saves. Not one of the bigger guys. I mean, he is one of the bigger guys in the Korean Baseball League. Decent numbers, but again, kind of have to see how those guys go. I think they're going to be a nice, two nice left-handed pitchers, actually. Coming in for the Padres here. So, oh, actually, I'm sorry. Go is actually a right-handed pitcher. But anyways, I think two nice international pitchers coming into the Padres just to kind of see how they do. Jake, what do you think?
Sam, we're going to take that mistake out of your budget right there. So
out of my 1 cent.
Can't be more than those after all of those great stats. But, I don't know a ton. I got to be completely honest. But looking at the Nippon Baseball League and the Korean Baseball League as a whole, like you mentioned towards the beginning, don't know specifically on the players' success. Great pickups for the Padres. We talked about them earlier with the Juan Soto trade. I think these are nice additions to the bullpen, which struggled. Of course, Josh Hader is imagined to be out the door as well. So you add these guys into the mix, unproven, you give them these contracts and to prove themselves, and super excited to see what both of them do in a Padres uniform. But to look at the contracts given out to a lot of these players from the Nippon Baseball League and the Korean Baseball League is great to see. And going back to the World Baseball Classic, that was the showcase. And I think that is we're seeing the byproduct of the amazing performances from Team Japan, Team South Korea, Team Korea in those matchups and seeing a lot of these players. The World Baseball Classic showcased to the world the amazing talent of these guys and made them such a hot commodity, which is amazing to see and something we haven't seen in a while in baseball. I'm so glad. And of course, you know, a guy named Shohei Ohtani, who has become the best player in the sport, is also, you know, not a bad recommendation, I guess, is the word. You know, hey, we got this great player from home baseball league and now he's the best in the world.
And one thing I'd just like to mention is that for these Padres pickups, they're on pretty good contract. Matsui's on a 4-year $21 million deal and Go is on a 2-year $4.5 million deal. So again, signing these guys for a decent amount of time, but for the price, I think they're pretty decent pickups too. Moving on here, we're gonna go to the big boy. We've mentioned him before. Cam just mentioned him, and we're going to mention him again. Shohei Ohtani signs with the Dodgers, and oh boy, was this a contract of the ages. It was very, very interesting contract. Signing for 10, here we are, 10-year, $700 million contract is crazy. And what's even crazier is most of that money is deferred until after he's done playing. I believe it is Shohei Ohtani will earn $2 million each year that he plays with the Dodgers. And then $68 million after that will be deferred from 2034 to 2043, which is crazy. You were going that it's nuts, but it worked. It worked. The Dodgers now have one of the best players in the world. Unfortunately, he is injured. He's going to have Tommy John surgery. But I mean, when he
no
comes
worries.
Back,
he's going to be one. He's going to be one of the best hitters in the sport again, Sam.
Oh, definitely. They're still going to, especially with this having the DH, which has been out for years now. I mean, having him at that DH spot is going to be crazy. When he comes back to pitch, he's going to be even crazier. The Dodgers made it work, and he's not even the only guy they got this offseason. We still have two more guys to talk about. But Jake, what do you think about the Dodgers signing Shohei Ohtani?
I think it is perfect for a few reasons for the Dodgers. Again, you get the best player in the sport. You put the team over the edge. If they weren't already with a team that had Mookie Betts and Freddie Freeman, two of the game's best as it is, and you get a transcendent unicorn player in Ohtani, the brand, the Dodgers brand, which has grown so much, but now just going to keep exponentially growing with Ohtani in the blue and white. And for Ohtani, again, you look at the contract, and you know, some fans furious that he's not getting paid the set. Some, you know, out there that are, you know, frustrated with the system, but he found a loophole of the system, and you know, you congratulate that he's going to be earning how much money in endorsements. So it's not like he needs that nearly $70 million per year anyways. He's a team first guy too. Go out and sign another guy who I'm sure, just kind of almost segueing into what you're going to say, Sam, but Yoshinobu Yamamoto, one of the best free agent pitchers out on the market, and he goes to the Dodgers as well, and he kind of freed that up to allow the Dodgers to do that.
Definitely, Jake. And I mean, well, we might as well just talk about him right now. Yoshinobu Yamamoto had taken the MLB news by storm for the past month, essentially trying to see who he's going to sign with, what team is going to get him, when are teams able to start talking to him. Well, he eventually signed with the Dodgers for 12 years, $325 million. I believe now, with them being able to kind of defer money from Shohei, they had some more money in place to just kind of throw at Yoshinobu. I think it's one of the highest paid contracts for a pitcher who has not played in the MLB yet, which is insane. And there's so many accolades. He has so many accolades from being in the Nippon Baseball League. It's kind of insane. He was a Japanese Series champion in 2022. He's been in the league, since 2017. 70 wins and 29 losses with a 1.82 ERA and 922 strikeouts since 2017.
Crazy. That is insane.
Multiple time All-Star. Has won the Japanese Triple Crown, which I'm not sure if they do it the same way in the MLB. I'm just going to blindly assume, but it would be the leader in strikeouts, earned run average, and wins, right?
I believe so, yeah.
It's those three categories. I know I'm kind of wishy-washy on this, but for the MLB, you lead the league in wins, strikeouts, and ERA to win the Triple Crown. And he's won that in the past 3 years, from 2021 to 2023. He's been a Pacific League MVP the past 3 years. He's won so many awards. I'm not sure what these awards are, but he's won like three separate awards. He's won the Pacific League Gold Glove Award the past 3 years, the Best Battery Award the past 3 years. He has been the ERA champion the past 3 years, strikeout champion, wins champion. I mean, this guy has been on fire the past 3 years, and I really hope it continues into the MLB. And I mean, Peter said he's seen videos of his fastball. His fastball is good. He's got a really good fastball, and I hope it transitions well to the MLB.
I just really, really quickly want to, these videos, these fastballs is nuts. Like, you can hear the sound, like, it's just crazy. But I seen a funny video of him the other day throwing snowballs, caption, "This is why you don't have snowball fights with baseball players." And like, you can hear the crashing impact of him throwing that snowball against a brick wall. It's like 50, 75 feet away. And it's the power behind his pitches. I'm so excited to see him in action in the MLB, to see what he can do with some of these top batters of the league. I want to see him go head to head with some of the best bats and see what he can do, see him strut his stuff, because I think he's going to be a much bigger threat than some of these people who don't realize, who aren't following him as closely as they should be.
Also, just another move the Dodgers made. The Dodgers also traded for Tyler Glasnow, and they also see veteran outfielder Manuel Margot for Ryan Pepiot and Johnny DeLuca. Another guy, and now Tyler Glasnow has struggled with injuries, and he's had these flashes of stardom. He's been fairly decent pitcher when he's healthy, but it's just kind of about him being healthy. The Dodgers did eventually end up extending him after they received him in the trade for 4 years, $110 million. So the Dodgers are decent on money right now, and they're willing to give it to someone like Tyler Glasnow, who has the potential to help their rotation. And I mean, their rotation's already pretty powerful now with Yoshinobu Yamamoto, now Glasnow, and Walker Buehler, and eventually, hopefully, Shohei Ohtani comes back into that rotation. So the Dodgers are setting themselves up to be a powerhouse for the next couple years here in the MLB. And it's kind of scary. It's very scary for our NL Phillies and just anyone in the MLB. I think they're going to be a very good team. They're kind of forming their dynasty for the next couple years.
Yeah, Sam, I think you look at those moves and of course, the Yamamoto one. There were so many other teams. Just looking at the market that was involved with him, you had the Mets, the Yankees, who we talked about earlier with Soto, were in on him. The Giants, again, we mentioned the Phillies made an offer. I mean, so many teams were in on him. Like you guys have mentioned, I think he's going to be very special. And it was a need for the Dodgers. You mentioned Glasnow. Two of those guys they just picked up, their rotation looking bit shaky as their one area of weakness. You know what they did? Just back up the Brinks trucks for Yoshinobu Yamamoto. Back up the Brinks trucks for Tyler Glasnow, who might be another one of those guys that, you know, he's injured. And, you know, he shows flashes of brilliance with the Rays. Then he just goes to the Dodgers, who turned around Jason Hayward, turned around some other guys these past few years, and could be a Cy Young contender. So it's a great move for the Dodgers.
Yes, definitely. And I'm going to keep moving on because we were talking about how my section was going to be short, and it has not been short, but I want to keep moving on. We're going to finish off kind of one of the last big international signings. Jung-Hoo Lee for the Giants here, coming from the KBO. Yeah, he came from the KBO. He played with the Heroes.
Yep.
Since 2017, he's had 340 average, 65 home runs, and 515 RBIs. Not a big power guy, but someone who's definitely had, with a career, a 340 average, someone who's definitely going to get on base and get you hits, which is a pretty good thing to see. He was KBO Rookie of the Year in 2017, and then he's been the MVP for the KBO in 2022, and he's also won the Golden Glove Award from 2018 to 2022. Good defensive
outfielder.
Don't
forget his nickname, Sam. Don't forget his nickname, the Grandson of the Wind. That is legendary.
That is a legendary nickname for sure. But kind of coming in, Giants have kind of been underwhelming. They did make a trade today, which actually bolstered their rotation. We'll talk about that. I only have two more trades I'm going to talk about. But kind of bolstering their offense a little bit. Someone who's going to get them on base. Someone who's going to help them out here. They've been underwhelming the past couple of years. They've started strong. We've seen them start strong in the past couple of years, but just recently they haven't been able to make a deep playoff push, haven't really been able to make any playoff push.
I think it's a great, great addition. I do wonder his power numbers. He did hit some home runs last season in the KBO. I know he'll have that, the AT&T Park there, the WAR to deal with, right field fence, McCovey Cove to deal with. A great defender. I think he fits into that Giants culture that still has got Bob Melvin in there now as the head man. I think he's going to fit in great and going to be one of those top of the lineup, speedy outfielders who's going to get on base and be a pest at the top of the order. And it's a great move for the Giants.
If you didn't see his introduction interview that the Giants had where they gave him his jersey, go watch it. He's a fun guy. He was really funny, and you could tell he was genuine too. He had a really good introductory speech, so go watch it. He seems like a cool guy. Coming up on the last two trades, we have Chris Sale, multiple-time All-Star, heading to the Braves in exchange for Vaughn Grissom, a young shortstop, looking young infielder, young shortstop, kind of looking Has had some flashes of big moments. Red Sox kind of looking to kind of ship out. They're kind of in a rebuilding phase right now. But Chris Sale, dominant pitcher in the early 2010s, multiple seven-time All-Star, World Series champion with the Red Sox. He's had some struggles. He's dealt with some injuries in the past. I know he had a big rib injury. I know he's had to have Tommy John surgery. But I think him, hopefully with the Braves have been a pretty good playoff team, as we've seen, coming off a recent World Series win in the past couple of years. But still kind of struggling in the playoffs early. They've lost to the Phillies the past 2 years. So, I mean, which is crazy because the Braves have been dominant. In fact, they were leading the division for the NL East here and got taken out by the Phillies pretty handedly. But I think that right now, and the Braves have been making a couple of moves. This is just kind of a one to get a veteran presence here, get someone who is kind of looking to rebound, someone who they can take a chance on, just kind of bolster their rotation. I think for the Red Sox, for Vaughn Grissom, I think they pick up someone who's going to be pretty bright. We've seen flashes of Vaughn Grissom. Actually, he hit a massive home run over the Green Monster. We've seen that video before, but I think it's a good deal for the Red Sox. Get a young middle infielder, someone who can help out that team in the future. Pretty decent for kind of what each team is going on with right now.
Yeah, I think you mentioned it. You mentioned the big concern, Sam, for Chris Sale is that injury history. And the Braves are hoping that they're not expecting him to be a number one guy by any means, but they're expecting him to be a middle of the rotation guy. Don't know if, you know, it's his time yet. I think there's hope that he can return to that, not Cy Young form, but, you know, a sub 350 ERA guy. We'll see. They extended him. I think it's a move that could benefit both teams. I think Vaughn Grissom, there was a bit of a stopgap, especially with how Orlando Arcia has played, how Ozzie Albies has played. He's not going to get a lot of playing time. Red Sox, he can get a fresh start. So I think this could be a win on both teams, moving in kind of two different directions.
Definitely. And kind of finishing up here, this trade actually happened a couple hours ago. Well, I was going to talk about Lucas Giolito because I think he's someone who can rebound. We'll mention that quick. Another Red Sox acquisition. Signed for 2 years, has been up and down, former All-Star, pretty decent, but we'll leave it at that. Last trade, now this one happened a couple hours ago. Robbie Ray going to the Giants, former Cy Young winner, in exchange for Mitch Haniger and Anthony DeSclafani. Robbie Ray, like I said, former Cy Young in 2021. Before that, he was a pretty average pitcher. Kind of came in 2021, definitely dominated with the Blue Jays, kind of was able to sign a big deal with the Mariners, and then had some pretty okay. He was pretty okay. He was fairly decent. Someone who you would have liked to see more out of the past 2 years with the Mariners, especially with all the hype around them, hoping they would be a playoff team. Unfortunately, didn't necessarily happen, but kind of hoping for him to have a resurgence, which has been a common theme with our starting pitchers. Mitch Haniger has been disappointing. Was formerly on the Mariners for a good bit of his career. Was an All-Star with them in 2018. Kind of what became average or even subpar, batting around the 240s, kind of missing out on some of those power numbers they would have liked to have seen him. Was with the Giants, was kind of hoping he would have a resurgence and average. In fact, he was injured for the second half of the season. Anthony DeSclafani was someone who was a reliable middle pitcher, middle starter, someone in the third, fourth spot. Has had signs of greatness, and then last season went 4-8. Was very, again, someone who's just kind of been on looking for a resurgence. So I think this is a pretty big trade for the Giants. Get someone who's been in that Cy Young position, bolster their rotation, which has been another common theme. Mariners, again, they've made some head scratching moves the past couple years. I think this is someone who I just don't think Robbie Ray was the fit for them, or they felt like he wasn't the fit for them. Tried to get someone back, but only getting Mitch Haniger and Anthony DeSclafani, two okay players at best. Again, a lot of head-scratching moves by these Mariners, not getting a lot in return. Jake, what do you think?
You know what? Sam, that is where you are wrong. I'm going to go with of course, I'm not saying the Mariners are going to be world beaters now, but I think they won this trade in the term of Robbie Ray. I mean, this guy is coming off of a Tommy John surgery. He was not that good before the trade. I don't think he's going to be taking Kyle Harrison's spot in the Giants rotation. I don't think he's going to be that 1B to Logan Webb. Maybe he'll prove me wrong, but you get a guy in Desclafani who's going to fit behind Logan Gilbert, who's going to fit behind George Kirby if they're keeping those guys. And you get Mitch Haniger back, who had his best years in baseball in Seattle. So I know it's head scratching. Let Jay DePito cook a little bit, Sam. This is a trade where I think we got to see how it plays out before we assume anything.
Fair enough. But again, a lot of head scratching moves by these Mariners. But unfortunately, my time is up, and that's all I have to say. So now everyone can give a sigh of relief as we talk about NFL football, and I'm done talking now. So see you all next episode.
Thank you, Sam. Thank you. Now here is Justin. Justin, you've been waiting for a long time, my friend, and take it away.
Thank you, Jacob. You're right. I've been here for what seems like a millennium, but now we are ready to talk about the NFL Week 18, to be precise, which is one of the most exciting weeks of the season, as we've already had a couple teams lock up their spots in the playoffs. A couple teams are already looking ahead to the draft, and then there are a couple who still yet need to get their bid for the Super Bowl. So, without further ado, I want to start at the very top. We are talking about are the one seeds of the AFC and NFC, the Baltimore Ravens and the San Francisco 49ers. The Ravens, of course, earning their number one seed after defeating the currently two seed Miami Dolphins in a lopsided affair. And then, of course, the San Francisco 49ers earning it by winning and then also getting a little bit of help from the Arizona Cardinals, of all people, defeating the Philadelphia Eagles in a head-scratching affair there. But let's talk on the AFC side first. I'm sure you guys want to gather your thoughts for that second one there. So let's start.
No, I have them gathered, Justin. I have them already.
All right, well, let's start with the Baltimore Ravens anyway. What a fantastic season they've had. Lamar Jackson at the top of the MVP conversation. They've had injuries, of course, with Mark Andrews, but still they've chugged right along. 13-3 right now. Their defense playing the lights out football. Their offense is just scoring at will. It seems like, you know, their year really to take the Lombardi Trophy.
Let's just be honest here. They've been the best team in the NFL this year, and I don't really think it's debate. I mean, they went to San Francisco and beat San Francisco quite handily. Lamar, maybe a bit of a shaky start to the year, but he has played lights out down the stretch here. I think the lead candidate for MVP. I know there's some debate about that, but he's definitely one of the lead candidates for MVP. There's no denying that. Like you said, Justin, the defense has been one of the top units in the league this year. I mean, just incredible. I mean, really, the only thing that's gone wrong for them has been Mark Andrews' injury, which you look, they have Isaiah Likely, who's stepped up big time and played really well down the stretch in his absence. So I really like everything about this Baltimore team going into the playoffs. I really do see them as the favorites to come out of the AFC.
Yeah, I want to really highlight the defense, especially on this team, like we've all been mentioning. Lights out defense. And I mean, they had 5 combined interceptions against the 49ers and with 2 quarterbacks. Like, it wasn't like, and I mean, now let me be transparent. I'll play both sides. Every quarterback has a bad game. Can you point at that game and say Brock Purdy is, that just proves that Brock Purdy's no good, blah, blah, blah? No, absolutely not. Everybody has a bad game. It happens. It just so happened that it was against the Ravens or the 49ers, and it kind of made the 49ers, it kind of like, in the eyes of blinded people, made them seem like an illegitimate, not so good as they seem, right? But I still think, I'm still not taking anything away from the 49ers' abilities and their skill level, but this defense, I mean, turnover after turnover after turnover, and their ability to pressure the quarterback and get past the line and just read routes as they're happening is incredible. And I mean, when we talk about a team who is an all-around consistent unit, that's the Ravens. They've been consistent on every side of the ball, and I can't speak for everybody, but I can speak for myself, and I didn't see it coming in the beginning of this season. To be very honest, when we were doing that podcast on who we thought was going to win that division, even the number one seed in the AFC, I didn't see the Ravens being a contender, but they showed up this season, and like Nate said, slow start, but you know, when you have team chemistry and everyone's working as a singular unit, you get a team like the Baltimore Ravens right now in my eyes.
Yeah, and to keep it with the defense, Kyle Hamilton looking like the steal of the draft, the plays that he's been making, talking about those interceptions as well, a phenomenal add for a team that has a history of phenomenal safety play and secondary play. And yeah, on the offense, Nate mentioned Isaiah Likely stepping up. But I'm going to mention a veteran that has won at the highest level, Odell Beckham Jr. Guys, I think his impact, he might not show up every game on the stat sheet, but I think he's a veteran on that offense that this team needed, a guy that has won a Super Bowl for the Rams just a few years ago. So, yeah, I think his addition has been paramount, and it's great to see the Ravens have this success. So all those years being right there on the cusp, struggling in the playoffs, I think this year's a different year.
No, I was going to say, you guys are missing a big, important guy, too. Let's talk about Zay Flowers, how much of a deep threat that guy is. Like, that, they have talent on every side of the ball, defensively, offensively. I really don't see why they shouldn't make a Super Bowl in the AFC when you have teams like, I think, I'm not going to lie, I still think Miami's frauds. But Kansas City has not been playing well. Cleveland is probably the only contender that could really probably beat the Baltimore team, in my opinion. So for them to really, I think they make a run this is their year.
Let's talk the NFC side of things, where the San Francisco 49ers, of course, locked up their one seed. But I don't really want to talk as much about how they did this season, because let's be honest, they did pretty well. I think that what we really want to talk about is the next division down at the two seed. We are looking at the NFC East, where the Dallas Cowboys and the Philadelphia Eagles are fighting for that one, for that second seed. And then, of course, there's also Detroit, who's looking for the second seed as well.
I'm going to say it right now. Detroit Lions got robbed of that game against Dallas. I am extremely glad that those referees got banned from refereeing the playoffs, because they do not deserve refereeing playoffs games if they were to do that terribly of a job in a regular season game. So congratulations, Cowboys and Cowboys fans. You snuck away with a win with the refs. Congratulations. What I will say is that, and I am saying this as a Eagles fan, they have been disappointing.
Oh, here we go.
They have been disappointing. They have been inconsistent. To be very blunt, I believe there need to be some staffing changes. I feel like Brian Johnson is not the guy for the job on the offense. I mean, he has not been calling good plays in certain situations. You don't call a screen play on 3rd and 19 with your smallest wide receiver blocking. Now he's injured and he's out. Like, that's the stupidest thing you could possibly do in two QB draws in a row. They know that Jalen Hurts can run. They know that they're going to create a pocket for Jalen Hurts. So defenses can read that like it's literature. I mean, it's not that hard. I mean, they need a different strategy. And on paper, this Philadelphia Eagles team is a disgustingly threatening team. But when you have people who don't manage the team properly, they become inconsistent, and the holes show. The defense's holes show. The offensive holes show. Jalen Hurts does not look like he did last year, and I believe part of that has to do with his leg injury that he's been battling this season. But I also believe that it's just the game management is not the same as it was last year. And, you know, that's the big part of the reason why they lost against the Cardinals. They had that game locked up, and they just shot themselves in the foot. I really feel like...
Peter, hold on a second. I believe that offensive mismanagement is the reason the offense is not converting when it needs to. I mean, you have a team with A.J. Brown, Devontae Smith, Jalen Hurts, Dallas Goedert there. You need to be
DeAndre
putting
Swift,
up points.
Hand the ball
you
off,
need
please.
It. Yes. You need to be able to convert situationally. Just the game, the instincts of this team are ridiculous. I think aside from the play calling, I mean, you get an onside kick, a gift from a 3-11 team that's giving you the game in that situation in a 28-28 game. Before I get into the defense, abysmal play, you've got to come away with a touchdown. You know how this game's going. You can't be making those decisions in a tie game and, you know, pushing the field goal out and putting it on your defense who struggled all game. To the defense, they have holes across the board. Guys have underperformed. Their pass rush isn't getting at the quarterback. Nearly half the sacks that they had last year. Their coverage, I mean, you've got rookies out there that are having to play on the ends, like Kelly Ringo, who was a good draft pick, a great player at Georgia. But, you know, he's starting as a rookie now because Darius Slay is hurt, James Bradbury has struggled, and you see the negligence of the linebacker position coming back to bite them in the butt. And you see, year after year, they did not draft there, and, you know, of course, it's the Eagles' way, if you will, but you're running out Shaq Leonard, who was dropped by a playoff team for a reason. Nicholas Morrow and Zach Cunningham, who've been in and out of the lineup and are not stopping these good tight ends, running backs on other teams. It's offense, it's the, you know, players underperforming and play call mismanagement. Defense, the holes are getting exposed all over.
I just think that, would you agree that Brian Johnson is not the guy for this offense? That's what I'm saying, as I'm saying that he's not managing the offense the way that offense should be.
I believe that it is, but I also believe that there should be blame all around for this
team. Oh, yeah,
game.
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
oh, yeah.
What's Sirianni providing for the team now? What is he doing now? He made the decision to defer play callings to this guy. He's putting trust in another guy, and it's clearly backfired. Where's the change to take it back? With the only change that has been made was the Matt Patricia change out for Sean Desai at the defensive coordinator position. But nothing, and of course, he's constantly brings up the numbers and the scoring stats. Yes, you can look at that, throw the analytics out the window for a second and realize that these plays are stupid, and some of these guys are not performing the way they should. You have players that are yelling at each other on the sidelines. Head coach needs to step in. Head coach needs to take control in that situation.
I agree. I think it's in the off season, no matter what happens, there needs to be a giant meeting with the entire whoever is running the Eagles at that point, whether it's the same coordinators or not. There needs to be a look. We got Patty smacked around last season, and we looked like ragdolls for the taking. What changes? And there needs to be a discussion, a serious discussion on the changes that need to be made and will be made on this team, because then you're gonna start losing guys' interest, like AJ Brown. And like, I mean, you bring in a guy like AJ Brown last year, who one of the most dominant wide receivers in the game. And rightfully so, is extremely frustrated with the outcomes of these games. There needs to be a discussion on what changes need to be made, what the plot holes are, which the defense is a big one, and the inconsistency in the offense is a big one. How are they going to fix it? And if it were to come up again, because there's always holes in a team, right? There's always going to be these bad patches in the season.
No team's perfect. No team's perfect.
No team's perfect at all. What's going to happen? Who is going to make the call and say, you know what? Like, we needed to have it happen earlier. Brian Johnson, you're not doing so great. Give the play calling back to Sirianni. We need someone to say, look, things aren't working. We are making a change. Not we should or we need to or we could. It needs to happen. Period. End of story.
Doesn't Sirianni need to do that? He's the head coach. I mean,
yeah.
At this
yes.
point, he needs
yes.
to make
yes.
the call.
I
blame
think
should go around everyone.
As much as I'm enjoying all this Eagles talk, I think we could save this for, you know, the off season when those kind of moves are to be made. The point I was trying to get at here was we have a fight for the 2 seed and the 3 seed here between Detroit, Dallas, and the Eagles. Who do you think is going to get it? If I were to place my bets right now, Dallas is playing against Washington. They're not good. And the Eagles, they're playing against the Giants. They're also not good, but, you know, anything can happen.
Doesn't mean much with the Eagles at this point.
So, regardless, I think Dallas is going to win that game, and I think they're going to lock up the 2 seed, and I think Detroit's going to be sitting at the 3.
I agree.
Can we just talk about for a second that how well CeeDee Lamb is also playing for Dallas at the moment?
Phenomenal.
Unreal.
He's playing phenomenal ball right now, and I think with that connection going on, they might make a deep playoff run. More than Philly does have a lot of issues, and I know we just talked about Philly. All I was going to say about Philly is because I didn't really get to say anything. But the only thing I would say about Philly is the problem is their secondary is so old. They have an old secondary. Kevin Byard is old. Darius Slay, they're old. They don't draft young rookie corners or the secondary. Bradbury, yeah, exactly. He's old too. But that's the only thing I was going to say. Enough about Philly. I'm sorry. I just wanted to get my ticket. But I think just Dallas. And Giants, honestly, Giants, didn't they already just play Philly? Am I not wrong?
They did, yeah.
Yeah.
They almost won that game at
they
the
did.
End.
They did. It was in Philly, too.
I know. They almost won. So, in my opinion, yeah, I think Dallas is going to lock up that 2 seed.
Yeah, I don't think there's much of a debate there. I think Dallas, the way that they've played, especially against, you know, teams like Washington, they shouldn't have any issue locking up the 2 seed.
They've already killed Washington already.
Exactly. They killed them. And the Eagles, as we already said, you know, struggled with the Giants at home. And now they have them on the road. I mean, listen, I don't think it's going to be a walk in the park for the Eagles, especially with the problems they've had recently. So, yeah, Dallas in the 2 seed and Detroit in the 3.
I think the only issue I have with Dallas is the same way with the Eagles, is only just with their offense. But I think it's only because Mike McCarthy is the only guy who runs that offense because they don't have an offensive coordinator. But the only issue, like, I know they've been playing well with CeeDee Lamb. I get that. They're not doing terrible. But I think reasons Dallas have lost some games is because of their playing calling coming down to the ends of Mike McCarthy. So that
they
is,
also
like,
lose
my...
when they're not at home.
But I'm saying, like, when I watch a lot of ball, I'll sit there and be like, wait, why are you guys punting this when you guys are, like, at the 30 or... Like, obviously they're not doing that. But, like, they still do stupid things like that. So, I mean, that's the only issue I would say about Dallas is what I have.
Yeah, and of course, then we have the 4 seed, which still is yet to be locked up, with Tampa Bay and New Orleans really fighting for that one. Both teams playing within the division, Tampa Bay playing Carolina, New Orleans playing the Falcons. I think if I had to choose who gets that right now, I would give it to Tampa Bay, just because, again, they're playing Carolina. What are the chances that they lose to a team that's won twice all year? Especially when they're fighting for the playoff spot.
It's the NFL, man. Crazier things have happened.
I mean, the Saints just beat the Bucs last weekend. The Saints, they went to Tampa Bay, and they kicked the crap out of them.
It doesn't matter what the Saints have done.
But they're playing. They know what's on the line. They obviously know what's on the line. I think they have a more experienced defense. I think the Saints will get it done.
I'm not doubting the Saints are going to win this week. What I'm doubting is the fact that the Tampa Bay Buccaneers would have to lose to knock. They would have, then have to get knocked out. The Buccaneers are right now in the spot. They are right now in the 4.
That's my mistake. I didn't know that. I thought that the Saints beating them jumped it.
They are right now sitting in the 4, and if they lose, then they can drop. But that's the only way that the Saints get it.
You never know.
I'm just going to say both teams are, they both have their struggles, which I was kind of a letdown with the Saints with how well, like, when they started bringing in, like, when they had Alvin Kamara, who's the other backup that came from Detroit? Why can't think of his name? Jamal Williams, Derek Carr. Like, I thought this offensive team, like, Chris Olave, I thought this offense was going to, like, explode, be great, like, do something fantastic. Kind of a letdown, but I will say with Tampa Bay, the only issue they're having right now is Baker Mayfield. I think his ribs or something are, like, injured or something, so that might be a potential, like, you gotta watch out, because of Baker, I think he is still playing, but he gets hurt that game, it could just go in the Saints' hand, but also...
And even more so, you gotta be concerned with re-injury.
It's a divisional game. It's gonna be a close game no matter what. I don't think anybody's gonna be like, oh, it's gonna be 40-0 or whatever. Like, it's gonna come down to either, like, a field goal at the end or maybe some touchdown, you know? Like, it's gonna be a close game. And I mean, Tampa does have talent, like, but the problem is they haven't really used the talent to their advantage, and basically the only guy that's really been popping off is basically Mike Evans. I see Tampa winning that game only because they're going to try to lock up the fourth seed, but I don't know.
Yeah, and then we just have the last wild card spot too, of course, with Seattle, New Orleans, Minnesota, funny enough, and Green Bay all vying for that one spot there. It's a toss-up. Anybody can really win this one, but if I had to go give my guess now, I'd say Green Bay has the best shot.
Over New Orleans?
I think so. Jordan Love's been playing really well lately. Bears is going to be a tough matchup. I think that's going to be a heated one. Of course, the rivalry in play, the two quarterbacks that are playing well. I like the pick, Justin. I'm gonna stick with you. Go Pack, go.
I think a lot of people, because the problem with Jordan Love, right, is he'll play either really well one game, like he'll like throw for like three touchdowns, 300 something yards, and then the next game he'll just like not do anything at all, and then you sit there and you're like, yeah, what is this guy doing? Like, what is he on?
Give me Sean Clifford.
Yeah, like, he's just, he's back and forth, but I agree with you both, actually, too. I think Green Bay's gonna, I think Jordan Love's gonna be good, probably, in the next few years, maybe even next year, make that other more leap, so I'm gonna go with Green Bay as well. I think they're gonna lock that up.
Like you guys said, though, he's been playing really well, especially recently, and, Sunday night on New Year's Eve against the Vikings, I mean, he was clinical in that game, you know, absolutely diced up that Viking secondary. And shout out to our boy Sean Clifford. He did get some time in that game, also completed a pass, so I'm gonna shout him out. But it's gonna be tight, because as you said, Jake, this is not like a cakewalk for Green Bay. The Bears have been playing pretty good recently. I think they'd like to end their season on a high note, especially knowing that they are guaranteed that number one pick, you know, so they're just going out there and playing. I think Justin Fields is going to go out there and play well. I think it's going to be a really tough game, but I guess I'll lean Green Bay to squeak out the win and take that wild card spot. But I would not be surprised at all if Green Bay lost and the Saints got won and were propelled into that wild card spot.
Yeah, I'm battling in my decision between the Saints and Green Bay right now, because I feel like the Saints have the caliber to even lock up that four spot if they had the opportunity, if, you know, Tampa lost, obviously. But the Bears, like you said, they are playing their hearts out. You know, they just want to end on a high note. I think that they stick with Justin Fields for another season. I don't think they draft another quarterback this season, because there's questions around it earlier this season. But, and you know, I won't take anything away from Green Bay. Jordan Love has been playing really well, you know, for him kind of being in the shadow of Aaron Rodgers. But I will lean Green Bay, but much like Nate said, it would not shock me at all to see New Orleans pick that spot up, because I feel like Green Bay has a little more things to work out in order to kind of like wholly grab that spot. So I will say, sure, Green Bay, with the stipulation of I would not be surprised at all if we saw New Orleans ending up at that spot.
Then let's hop over to the AFC side of things, where we left off talking about Baltimore. So let's get over to down to the 2 seed, where we have a battle going on between the Buffalo Bills and Miami Dolphins. And of course, they have to play in the last slot of the day, so I will be stressed the entire day for that, and working at the same time, which will be quite an unfortunate circumstance.
Oh,
but
no. Justin.
Well, don't worry about me, boys. Right now, let's just worry about Miami and Buffalo in Miami for their last matchup. Now, of course, the first time they played, Buffalo defeated Miami pretty handily by about 28 points. So this time, though, anything can happen. That was a season ago, basically, at this point. And, you know, these teams have been through a lot. Miami has, you know, done exceedingly well against lower competition, but anytime they've played a team at or above 500, they've lost, except for the one occasion they play Dallas, who can't win against a team above 500 away. So
can't beat a team above 500, and they can't lose it. I mean, they can't win it unless they're at home.
Then you have the Bills are like the opposite there, Justin, though. The Bills love to play great against good competition, but lower comp.
But I mean, technically, record wise, Miami's good competition. So if I had to call the winner of this game based on the trends, I think I'd be calling Buffalo to win. But of course, I have no idea what's going to happen. I know what
I hope.
Is Tyreek
Hill expected to play?
There's no way he's not going to play.
Oh, okay, so all I'll say is there was video of him in a walking boot recently, like a few days ago. I wasn't sure if his status was still up in the air, or if he was like a, this is more of a precautionary thing and he's going to still play.
Well, for me, this game I think is going to still be another tough game. I mean, I like to shit on Miami sometimes because they like to utilize Tyreek as crazy as they do.
Who wouldn't?
But you gotta remember, I know, I get that. But I'm saying, like, the stipulation of this game is really high, like, for a second seed. Both of these teams are gonna, like, really battle it out. I mean, obviously, I'm biased because I want Miami to win because I'm a Steelers fan. So, obviously, I'm gonna be like, go Miami. I'm gonna be like,
go Miami. Put the bias aside, Cam. Put the bias aside.
But I think Buffalo has been playing really well recently. I think they're just starting to, like, I know it's been late in the season, but I think now they're starting to figure it out, and I don't feel confident in Miami winning. Like, I still think it's going to be close, but for me, I think Bills are a different team right now than Miami, and as much as record-wise says that they're not, I still think Buffalo is a lot better than Miami right now. So I think Buffalo locks up that second seed.
No, I was just going to say, I think the biggest addition for the Bills has not necessarily been the players on the field, but Joe Brady. I think going all the way back to before they lost to the Eagles on the road in overtime and a shootout of a game. But what he has done and transformed this offense, they've utilized James Cook a lot more. He is a very explosive out of the backfield, had a career day against Dallas a few weeks ago, and not putting it all on Josh Allen, which, you know, Justin can correct me if I'm wrong, but it just felt like early in the season, he was trying to make the superhero play. He was trying to do everything. They've gotten back to the running game. They've allowed him to spread the ball out more. And that offense has just been the benefactor of it. And like you guys have said, I think the Bills should be favored in this game.
I agree. I think the Bills are favored. I think, much like it's been that talk's been going around, it's going to be battle of grit and grind. I think it will come down to a wire of a game. I don't think it's going to be a handled game by anybody, I will say. They are playing in Buffalo, correct?
No, they're playing in Miami.
Oh, and they're playing Miami. Okay, sorry, my mistake. So that somewhat puts an edge towards Miami, but it really doesn't because, you know, Buffalo's adaptable and warmer weather's nicer to play in anyway, but especially this time of year. But
it is the night game, so the sun will not be a factor.
So the sun will not be a factor. But, no, what I was kind of getting at was that, you know, you gotta take a look at both teams where, you know, and I kind of want to get Justin's opinions on this. Stephon Diggs' performances lately, what are your thoughts?
It's not so much his performance, it's more so what the team is asking him to do. So under Joe Brady, they're scheming him a lot differently. They're basically using him more as a decoy for opening up the game for players like Gabe Davis. We just got Khalil Shakir's coming on as of late in the passing game. Dalton Kincaid, of course, and then James Cook as well. So it's really not so much a downshift in performance as it is a change in scheme.
Do you believe, okay, so, and I'm asking this to you because you're a fan and because, you know, you follow the team closer than all of us probably do. Do you believe that they should utilize Stephon Diggs more in this game or keep the scheme going? Because I personally think that you need to get Stephon Diggs the ball a little bit more in this game. You know, still use him as a decoy here and there, but utilize him a little more because I feel like if you want to, Gabe Davis is a great receiver, but if you want assurance, I mean, I would get the ball to Stephon Diggs for big plays like that maybe, like, in those tight positions, and I believe that Miami's going to use Waddle, and if he plays Tyreek Hill as much as they can, so using your big players, I believe, are going to make the most impact in this game. I think it's going to be a big offensive game, so what are you thinking on Stephon Diggs' role in this game?
I think that Stephon Diggs, of course, should keep doing what he does, but it's dangerous to target a player just because they're great. You know, you really can't throw the ball to somebody unless they are open, because otherwise you're just asking for an interception.
Oh, so, no, obviously.
So I think that, yes, we should try and scheme him open if we can, but honestly, I would rather we go to the surefire 3, 4, 5-yard plays, get down the field, whoever that may be. And if it ends up being Stephon Diggs, then I can expect greatness because he typically makes a great play for us here and there. But I don't really need to see the ball in his hands to be happy. I just need to see the Bills having a higher score than the Dolphins to be happy.
Yeah, and like, you know, they've been playing, as you said, very, very well under Brady, Joe Brady recently. And I wouldn't change it up. I mean, the way James Cook's has been playing, you know, with the way the running game has been going for them, it's been terrific. And, you know, I'll also bring up Miami is banged up on defense. I mean, they lost Bradley Chubb to a torn ACL, very unfortunate. They lost Jalen Phillips to a torn Achilles, I think, like a week or two ago as well. So that's two of their best defensive players. Their two top linebackers are out for the season. And then I believe I read that Xavier Howard, the cornerback, isn't playing this Sunday against the Bills either. So they're going to be banged up on defense. The Bills, listen, if I were the Bills, I wouldn't, you know, change much. I'd be sticking to what we've been doing under Brady and just, you know, let Josh Allen go out there, play, run the ball, don't force anything. Just let it all naturally come, and I think the Bills should and will win the game to get into the playoffs and to lock up the division.
But let's move on now to the 4 seed, because the 3 seed's locked up with Kansas City sitting there. So the 4 seed being Jacksonville. Of course, if they win, they get it. But if they do not, then Indianapolis and Houston both have a chance, as they all have tied records, believe it or not, in that AFC South division, 9-7 for all of them. I think we all called that Jacksonville was going to get this at the start of the season, but I don't think any of us really expected Houston to be playing so well of all teams. And even the Colts, who had a terrible season last year, turning it around this year, already securing a winning record, and now they had to play each other for a spot in the playoffs. It's one of those situations that you really can't write.
You know, I just want to give a big congratulations to the Houston Texans, and especially to these rookies on that team. C.J. Stroud, I mean, even though he got injured recently, Tank Dell, the wide receiver, those two guys, I mean, 1-2 punch. When Nico Collins isn't open, C.J. Stroud to Tank Dell is almost automatic. And then you're looking at Will Anderson, is the defensive man that they drafted. He's pivotal for that defense. I mean, congratulations, Houston. I will admit fault. I think almost
putting him in the playoffs already, Peter.
That's what it sounds like.
Yeah.
Hold on. I'm congratulating them for their progress, because none of us can say that we expected them to be this good. I think almost all of us guarantee that they'd be the worst team in the league again.
Well, you could definitely say they've hit on their draft picks. You could definitely say that. They've hit on their draft picks.
Yeah, they've hit. Oh, yeah.
Well, when you got two in the top five, you know, that kind of happens.
It helps. It definitely helps. However, I still want to stick with the Jaguars and have them lock that spot up. However, my backup, if the Jags lose, if my little if the Jags lose clause in that saying, I feel like the Colts could do it. I feel like the Colts can edge it out. Like, you know, Gardner Minshew has been an electric leader for that team. I mean, we watch him play. He's an electric guy, his charisma. But I think that the Colts have just a little bit of a leg up on them. And the Texans are still dealing with a little bit of injuries with some of their players. So I think that the Colts will take it from the Texans if it comes to that. But I'm going to stick with the Jaguars.
I'm going with the Colts.
All right there, mister. I hope the Steelers lose out.
Yeah.
Okay, let me just say something about the Steelers for a second, now that you talked about them.
We'll just talk about the Steelers now. Okay, let's go.
Okay. No, okay. Yeah. Peter had his shot with the Eagles. It's my turn. Okay. Okay, at first I was like, they were doing let them out. But since Mason Rudolph came in, they have been playing out of their minds right now. And plus, that run attack right now is crazy. They have the second best run duo in the NFL with Jalen Warren and Najee Harris. Yet alone, you have George Pickens, who's making phenomenal catches out of nowhere. And Mason Rudolph's being able to get it to him. I mean, I think this team actually, from the way I've been watching them play the past 2 weeks, I think this team can actually do pretty well with Mason Rudolph under center. And people were like, oh, Mason Rudolph. Oh, it's Mason Rudolph. No, Mason Rudolph's been in the system for how long now? So I really think that, like, they... And plus, you got to remember, Steelers had a shitty quarterback and still beat the Baltimore Ravens. Let's just start there, too.
Cam had his Skip Bayless. It's my turn. I told you it's my turn.
But honestly, I'm not going to lie to you. If Steelers, like, the past couple of weeks, and I'm not even saying this because I'm a Steelers fan, because, like, I'm pretty honest with myself when I watch the games and stuff. But from the past 2 weeks, seeing Mason under center, like, if they play like that the whole way through, they can win a playoff game at least, or even just keep going a little bit more. But that's why I'm like, yeah, let's go Steelers, blah, blah, blah. Like, they have a great ground attack. Like, the ground attack is crazy. Like, it's just, I really think they're one of those teams that could really make a good, okay run. Not Super Bowl contender, because they're not going to make Super Bowl. Like, let's be honest, they're Steelers, but I think they can make a good run.
All right, well, I think this is a good time just to bring up the fact that all these teams are 9-7, so yeah. let's get to it. Come on, let's put our money where our mouth is, get some picks out here. We got Jacksonville, Indianapolis, Houston, and Pittsburgh, all 9-7. Assuming, hear me out for a minute. Assume that we're all right and Buffalo wins, they're the 2 seed, Miami drops to the 5, then that's KC at 3, Baltimore at 1. We have the 4, the 6, and the 7 still available. 4 teams fighting for the spots. Who gets them? Now, if you need me, I'll tell you who they're all
Hold
playing.
Hold on,
I'll tell you who they're all playing. Jacksonville is playing Tennessee, and they are currently they are sitting in the 4 seed. If they win, they're in. Indianapolis currently sits in the 7 seed.
And they play the Texans.
They play the Texans. Texans sit in the 8th. They play Houston, or they play Indianapolis.
So, and winner gets in no matter what there.
Yeah. Winner of that game gets in.
I don't know. So if Miami loses to the Bills, they're, what, in the 5, you said, right?
They would be the 5.
They would be the 5.
Cleveland
okay.
would then be the 6.
Cleveland's guaranteed the 6.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, so then it's 4 teams, 2 spots.
From a non-biased like standpoint, let me be honest here. Steelers do not deserve it, and you want to know why? Because the Steelers lost to Houston and Colts in the season.
And the Jaguars.
And the Jaguars. So let's start there. But obviously, I brought up Mason Rudolph.
If the Jaguars win, the Steelers are out.
Yes. Yeah, so if the Bills win and the Jaguars win, the Steelers are out. They can't make it in. But if either Bills or Jaguars lose those games, like, the Steelers are in. It just depends on the seeding. I think they get the 6th seed if the Bills lose.
You also need to win, of course. Pittsburgh also needs to win.
But yeah, they need to win.
They are
playing
against Baltimore, who are sitting their starters.
But they are. There's. I think some starters are sitting. Some starters are not.
Lamar
but
Jackson
yeah, Tyler,
definitely is.
Yeah, Lamar. Yeah, Lamar. I know Odell's sitting, so that's why I feel. They play tomorrow, so I'll be watching that game. But I mean, from a non-biased standpoint, I really think Houston and Colts deserve it more. But I mean, I don't know. It just anything could happen. So like,
what are your feelings?
Pick it. Who do you got? Colts. All right, you got the Colts and Texans play each other. So start there.
Okay. Okay.
Who do you have winning that game?
CJ's playing now.
He is gonna play. Yeah.
Okay. Okay, I think with the mentality of C.J. Stroud, but also you got Gardner Minshew, who's not...
All right, we'll let Cameron think about his thoughts.
both of those teams are very similar in the way they play. And I really think just it's going to come down to defense. And for me, I like the Colts defense over the Houston's defense. But at the same time, I also like the Houston's offense as well. So, I mean, I'm going to go with my boy C.J. Stroud. I think he's having a phenomenal year. If he's going to make more of a MVP type of runner, maybe, I guess, because he is in the running. But, I mean, like, make more of a statement. I think it's going to be one of those statement games for him. So I think I'm going to go with Houston for my pick, just for that reason.
Is that for the division, or is that for wild card?
That's for wild card.
So then you think Jacksonville will win?
Yeah, I think Jacksonville will win.
All right, so then he's got Jacksonville in the 4. And Houston in the 7.
I'm going to go Jacksonville in the 4. I think Buffalo wins, putting both them and Miami in. And I think that the Texans will get in as well. So it'll be Baltimore, Miami, Kansas City, Jacksonville, Cleveland, Buffalo, Miami will switch, but both will be in some standing, and then the Texans will beat the Colts and get in.
Yeah, I'm right on that same wavelength as you, Jake. I think the Texans, who they lost to the Colts early on in the season, I think that they'll avenge the loss, and I think that they'll lock up that wild card spot.
Jags lock it up. They play the Titans, who, you know...
The Titans stink.
I mean, yeah, they stink, but Will Levis had a couple good games in him. I think they have more rebuilding to do, which is the reason I think they don't have as much to play for. They don't have a high note thing to play for. They don't have like draft picks to play for. So it's kind of like they're just what it is kind of mentality right now. What I'm gonna say is,
don't count out Will Levis.
I'm not counting out Will Levis, but I am counting out Will Levis because I think the Jaguars will win that game. I do enjoy watching both quarterbacks and C.J. Stroud and Gardner Minshew play. I think they both have a massive mental impact on their team. You know what? I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt. I'll go Texans, locking up at 7. I think that C.J. Stroud has been one of the best offensive rookies we've seen this season. He has quieted the haters on the Houston Texans. He's showed that that team is worth being mentioned even, so I'll give it to the Texans and the Jaguars. I'll continue to train. Although Gardner Minshew's veteran abilities, I would not put past them. I would not, again, like I've been saying for a lot of these games, I wouldn't be surprised. Like it's so close in a lot of these races that I wouldn't be surprised to see the opposite team be the ones that come out on top.
Yeah, I gotta say, I think in the 4, Jacksonville's gonna lock that up against the Tennessee Titans. I just don't think that they have enough to play for, especially against Trevor Lawrence's squad. And I think that Houston is going to squeak this thing out and get into the playoffs. CJ Stroud in his first season, he's going to take them there. Nate, of course, you're correct. He is the more NFL-ready quarterback in the draft, and he will prove that and take his team into the playoffs. Not sure how far they will go, but I think that they will eventually get there. And I just want to quickly, team that I want to mention here, the Cleveland Browns. So they've kind of been forgotten in our conversations here, but they do have the playoffs
Joe
locked up.
Joe freaking Flacco, man.
And if we're going to talk about a team with a great defense, let's talk about the team that I think personally has the best defense in the NFL, better than Baltimore's defense. That would be the Cleveland Browns. They have a shot to beat Baltimore, and it's because of that defense.
Yeah, they do. And I mean, I don't know how everybody else here feels, but they have a legitimate shot or argument for potentially getting out of the AFC this year. I mean, just the way certain other teams are looking, you know, Kansas City's having a down year. Joe Flacco's come in. Sure, he's had some turnover issues, you know, throwing a lot of interceptions, but he's still been fantastic getting the ball down the field, especially to Amari Cooper. David Njoku has really performed well for them. Like you said, Justin.
Yeah, he just won me a championship. Fantasy.
Yeah, he did.
He kind of reminds me of Joe Flacco from when he played on the Ravens. Like, he is just managing that team so well, especially from being called up from this couch, you know? Like, he tells the story that he is sitting watching football when he got the call. So, no, I mean, and if I had to pick a team to upset the Ravens, it would be the Cleveland Browns. I'm going to be unbiased. I think that the Browns' defense is better than the Ravens' defense. I think it'll be a battle if it comes to that situation because of the turnovers. The Ravens have proven to have a lot of turnovers caused on that defense. But if a team was to do it in the AFC, it would be the Browns to upset the Ravens.
Yeah, I agree with you guys. I think the impact for the Browns so far has been great. And we've kind of seen that with the defense. The defense has led the charge through the quarterback change, and it's been huge for that. And with that, the NFL segment coming to an end. Thank you so much, Justin, for that segment. Sam, great segment as well, guys. To conclude a great episode we have so far. College football playoff. We've got the first round. The first round of the playoff is done. We've got Michigan. We've got Alabama for the first game. A great game, went to overtime, and it was a great matchup. Oh, overtime, some tough calls. Michigan comes out with the win. But then also, you look at the other side, Washington, coming out with a big win over Texas. Guys, your thoughts?
I mean, I think you have to start just by, you know, acknowledging how great both games were. I mean, both semifinals were just tremendous. Came down to the wire. I watched both of them. I mean, the Alabama-Michigan game was a classic in the Rose Bowl, to be quite frank. Michigan was really dominant. However, they had some mishaps on special teams, especially in the first half. Kept Bama in the game. Second half, Bama came out, made some adjustments, got the lead. You get late into that fourth quarter, you know, and some teams could just rally, and this Michigan team's rallied all year, played fantastic, went down the field, scored game tying touchdown, and then in overtime took care of business. Washington, you have to just point out that Michael Penix Jr. is that guy at quarterback. He played tremendous. I mean, the deep ball that he can throw is beautiful, and it hurts because I saw him beat Oregon twice, but my goodness, I mean, he is tremendous. That offense is explosive.
Don't forget J.J. McCarthy, how well he played for Michigan. He threw for three touchdowns, too.
He did. He did.
They're both playing very well, so I think it's going to be a very good championship game. It's final, whatever, championship. I forget what they call it in college. But I'm really excited about it. Now, as a Penn State lover, I don't really like Michigan that much, but I got to give credit where credit is due, obviously. And J.J. McCarthy is obviously that guy. He is him. So I think for the bowl, I really think Michigan's going to win it all. I really don't see why they shouldn't. I think it's going to be a really good game, really close. And it's going to be a very good quarterback battle between both quarterbacks as well. So I want Washington to win. I do. I really want Washington to win. But
Cam, you bring it up, guys. Who are we thinking to wrap up the episode? Who do you think wins the college football championship? Cam, you just kind of brought up your pick with Washington. Guys, what are we thinking here?
Yeah, I think Michigan wins, but Washington keeps it really close. I do want Washington to win, but I still think Michigan's going to win it all.
Yeah, I mean, I follow along the lines here, somewhat biased as well, being a Penn State student and someone who's gone to every Penn State game at home. I saw this Michigan team play in Beaver Stadium this year. They're lights out. Their defense is for real, and they can run the football. I do think Michigan, I think it's their year. I think that they will win the final, as much as it pains me to say. It's just, you know, the hardships they've been through, especially with, you know, the sign stealing scandal and everything. I think that they've overcome so much that now that they've made it to this point, they're gonna win.
Yeah, I agree. I think Michigan will take it out. I mean, we're gonna continue on the Penn State trend. I mean, I'm looking at two guys who are some of my best friends in the world, and they're Penn Staters, so obviously I'm right along with them. So I will say Michigan wins. I think they have the heart and the feeling behind it, but I won't discredit Washington for their efforts. You know, I commend them for putting on a phenomenal show. That's the word I was looking for, was phenomenal, but a phenomenal showing. And, you know, but I do ultimately think that with J.J. McCarthy and with that defense, I mean, that defense is nasty. I think Michigan will take it.
Yeah, you know, you're looking at one of the best defenses in the country versus one of the best offenses in the country. But usually when that happens, when you see a great offense and a great defense...
Defense wins championships.
Usually when you see that, it's usually the other side of the ball. It's really the other side of the ball that kind of decides the game. And here we're looking at a Michigan offense that just runs the ball so well. But then you also have this, you know, defense of Washington that can play against these high-powered offenses like Oregon and win. So it's a tough matchup. And, you know, in a matchup like this, I think I'm going to go with the better quarterback, because in a shootout, that's who wins. I'm going Washington.
Ooh. Justin, go with Washington. Sam, you want to add in a pick here?
Oh, yeah, why not? I like seeing teams kind of go up against adversity. One of these teams obviously had to deal with something pretty big, but still kind of able to push through. I believe they're 13-0, right?
Like, both are 14-0. 14-0, both teams.
Oh, 14. Yeah, I forgot. Yeah. So I believe now they're going to go 15 now. I'm going to give it to Michigan.
That is where you are right, Sam. I'm going with Michigan. I, Justin, I see your points. Cam, see your points for Washington. And, you know, I think Michigan, like Nate said, it's their year. I think, you know, with all the adversity that they've faced, I think that they get it done. And they win the national championship. Bring it back to the Big Ten. Big Ten there, you know, gotta represent the conference a little bit, right? Even though Washington a future member.
Well, Washington's a future member.
of the conference. Can't wait to see that unfold in the coming years. But that will do it for this episode. Thank you so much to everyone that has listened to this longer episode of the Lunch Hour Sports Podcast, making up for all those lost weeks. Thank you all for listening. Be sure to tune in to new episodes on YouTube and Spotify.